for, reducing the dimension and then in the reduced space perform a function estimation. And I will finish with an example. Now let us see what is going on. Consider you have the so-called air pollution and mortality data set. Maybe some of you know them. These are 59 observations of 13 variables totally, meaning one variable is the response, the mortality in the US. And then we have some regressor variables like air pollution and socioeconomic conditions like the income, population density, employment, and so on. And we want to relate this outcome by the x, by some function f. Well, this doesn't look very challenging somehow, but look here. You see we have 12 regressor variables, and we have 59 observations for each. So you see there is the relation between the number of variables and the number of observations, and we heard about that. What is a large sample? What is a small sample? I would say this is a really small sample for a large dimension, and the question is whether we can cope with that. And I mean, okay, 12 doesn't look like a really large dimension, but maybe it is. We will see. Let me tell you something about the formalism behind that. The task is, well, assume we have a d-dimensional regressor variable and we want to link it to a one-dimensional response y by some unknown function g, and we do not take any further assumptions about this function g. And as usual, we have a sample of size n given of the x and y observations. Assume further that the dimension d of the regressor variable is large. I'm not specifying what large is now, but assume just whatever you assume to be large. And then the task is to estimate this function g, and if we do not take any further assumptions, we would use a non-parametric estimation usually. So non-parametric regression methods is what we would like to use in such a case. Now, up to here, it's everything quite fine. But now comes the problem, and I'm sure you know about that. Problem in higher dimension, the great but, is the sparseness of the sample space. So you know that in higher dimensions, you can have very many observations. Still, the sample space is rather sparse, meaning that in the neighborhood of any observation, there doesn't lie, or there don't lie, many other observations. So if you just look here, you take a variable x, for example, normally distributed, d-dimensional, standard normal, and then you look at the probability of x to lie in a ball of radius 0.5. And then you see that this probability, the ball is centered around the origin, this probability is essentially zero. So you see that already 10 is a rather high dimension in this view on things. And you see, it doesn't become better, of course, with increasing dimension. And this sparseness of the sample space, also called the curse of dimensionality, leads to the effect that especially non-parametric methods, which are based on some neighborhood approaches, fail. I mean, they have the wonderful theoretical properties they go through, and there's no problem with that. But practically, if you have a sample, you can't do anything because you don't have enough observations in these neighborhoods. And of course, I mean, this effect is well known by now, and of course there are approaches to solve this problem. For example, we have the approach of projection pursuit regression, and we already heard some things about projections, and in this context we can also see the projection pursuit regression, namely to find projections of the data and functions of these projections fit the data very well. So you find certain projections and put them together with functions on them so to predict the y observations best. And this is projection pursuit regression. This is one approach. In some sense, we can call that also parametric because the functions we use to link the projections to the outcome are usually more parametric than non-parametric functions. On the other hand, we have approaches like the regression trees, which can also, or which try to cope with this high-dimensional situation. And then we can also do something different. We can say, well, let us look whether we can first reduce the dimension of the regressor space somehow in an appropriate way. And then, in the reduced space, use the usual non-parametric regression methods, which should work better then because the sparseness isn't that severe anymore. And this is what we call here dimension adjustment method. First, reduce the dimension of the regressor space if possible, and then estimate the functional relationship in the reduced space. A method to do so is the method of sliced inverse regression, introduced by Lee, and the model for dimension reduction behind that is, well, it's a quite, let's say, simple idea if you have gone through all that. It's just to think that instead of linking x and y via function g in the d-dimensional space, assume that there exists some lower dimensional space of dimension k, k much smaller than d, where you can project your data into the space b. And in this very low dimensional space, there exists a function f linking these projections to y. And then you can estimate f in this lower dimensional space. And the method SIR is a method to do so, and this is the model behind that. In general, what I call a dimension adjustment method consists of the steps given here. First, estimate or know about the dimension k of the reduced space. Then estimate the space appropriately. Usually this is combined in one step, but I put it as two separate steps here. Then project your x, your regressor variables, into this space, and then estimate the function f in this reduced space. And this is the general concept of a dimension adjustment method. And now the question, why do we think it is necessary to have this as a robust method? Well, the public here, the audience here, I think I do not have to convince you that it is necessary to have it in a robust way. But just to point it out, there are essentially three steps where, for example, outliers can influence this procedure very heavily. The first is the estimation of the dimension k of the space. And we could show that it is possible to get, for example, an estimated dimension of 0, telling us there is no relationship between our x and y, even if there is a true relationship of dimension 1. So it is possible just with a certain placement of an outlier to get this completely broken down in this sense without defining it essentially as a breakdown in the sense of breakdown point. Second way it can go wrong is the estimation of the space B itself. And there you can show that it is possible to estimate this space completely orthogonal to the true dimension-reducing space if you place an outlier, just one outlier, in some methods appropriately. So here you see the need for robust methods in this case. And then finally, the estimation of f may also be affected severely by the existence of an outlier. So also in this step, we should have a robust procedure. Now, I already said there exists this sliced inverse regression method, one special dimension adjustment method. Now, not really a dimension adjustment method as I introduced it to you here, but a method just to reduce the dimension of the regressor. I mean, this sliced inverse regression, although the name stands for regression, does not do any regression modeling. In fact, it assumes the dimension reduction model, as I introduced to you, and then it shows how to find the space B in which this functional relationship takes place, but it doesn't estimate the function f itself. So in this sense, it is not really a dimension adjustment method, but just a method for dimension reduction of the regressor variable. Now, Li showed that under certain conditions, the inverse regression curve, appropriately centered and normalized, almost truly lies in a certain linear subspace, which is essentially spanned by these directions beta 1 to beta k, spanning the space B we are interested in. Meaning that when estimating the inverse regression curve, instead of the usual regression curve, we are able to find an estimate for the space B by just multiplying these directions we find out with sigma to the minus 1/2, or sigma hat to the minus 1/2. In this case, we have to estimate sigma, where sigma is the covariance matrix of the X in this case. So meaning by estimating the inverse regression curve, we can find an estimate of the space B we are interested in. And this is essentially what SIR does. It gives a very rough estimate, namely a step function, for the inverse regression curve, and then looks where this curve is spread out, where are the main directions of variability, and thus leads to an estimator for the space B. Slice inverse regression, or SIR for short, is essentially based on centering and normalizing the inverse regression curve, and this is based on sample mean and covariance, and then finding out the directions of main spread or main variability. This is essentially a principal component analysis in that step, and this means that SIR is completely based on non-robust estimates and is itself in that way non-robust. But we have this robust alternative, which we call dimension adjustment method, or DAME. It has the same features as SIR. Essentially, the basics are totally the same, except for the estimators. We base the centering and the normalizing on robust estimators of location and scatter, and we perform a robust principal component analysis in the step of the procedure where this comes, and then we can show that this method is essentially less influenced by outliers. Not totally uninfluenced, but less influenced. And I can show you an example just to fix ideas and to see what happens. I have here an example of a data set. It is 10-dimensional X, and one dimension of X is the one which is responsible for the link. So our response Y is linked to the 10-dimensional vector via the first component, via the sine function of the first component. And you see here the plot of this first component and the response. And then I use this whole data set and apply SIR and see what the projection of SIR gives me, dimension k of 1, meaning there's a one-dimensional relationship. Okay, you can project into the dimension reduction direction, which is just a one-dimensional space B here, and can plot this against Y, or Y against this, and you see that the sign is found essentially rather clearly. So there is, with undisturbed data, no outlier in this, just a data set generated, the X normally distributed, no problems at all, so it works very well. Okay, now, same data, but one extreme outlier. Essentially, I took the first observation of XY and the first component put to 100,000. So it is rather extreme if I sampled from standard normal for the X, you see. And in this rather extreme putting the outlier, you see what happens if you now apply SIR and project into the space B SIR finds. And you see that essentially you can't see anything anymore. So this completely fails. On the other hand, if you do the same data with this extreme outlier, apply the robust method DAME, well, you see, it doesn't find the sign that clearly as before, but the characteristics is there. You can still see it is a sine curve. I mean, you see this wiggling, and it's not that precise, but it's very much better found than before. So the proposal for the dimension reduction step would be, of course, to use the robust version. But that's not all. I mean, you don't stop here. You want to estimate this function. And here comes work of Laurie Davis and his group from Essen, where they use the robust non-parametric regression to estimate this functional relationship. Essentially, what they do is to estimate f under the control of the number of local extremes. The methods work in certain steps. First, say you want to estimate a function with k local extremes. Then you estimate this function by trying to make the residuals looking as best as possible like white noise. There are several criteria to do so. It's just to get the idea here. But essentially, you try to find something that looks like white noise. And then you do that for several k, k decreasing with local extremes, and take that I've had you found with the smallest number of local extremes. And there are two methods coming from the different criteria of looking like white noise. Essentially, these are the run method and the taut strings method. The run method is the method looking for the sequences of signs of the residuals, just looking at the signs, and then taking that f such that the run length of the longest run is small, so that the signs change very rapidly. And the other one is the taut strings method, which essentially takes the data as processed and integrates the process, sets bounds on the integrated process. Within these bounds, inscribe piecewise linear functions and then differentiate again, so yielding a step function in the end as an approximation for the function f. And both methods yield step functions, hence the final step would be that a smoothing is done over the resulting function. But this is work in progress. And this was just to give an impression of how these methods work. I show you the example again. These are, again, the data from before, the undisturbed data without the outlier. And we already saw that with SIR, we get very clear identification of the sine curve. And this is the step function coming out as the result of both the runs method and the taut strings robustified method. They don't differ by size, so you can just plot one of them. And to the right, you see the result given if you use DAME for the dimension reduction step, and you see that there is essentially no difference between them. So in the case of undisturbed data, you can just use whatever you like, whatever combination you like, it works fine. But now, again, the same data with the outlier in x1 direction, and there you can see that now, of course, as you could already see in the projection of the data into the dimension reduction space, with SIR you can't find the structure anymore, not with anything. And this is the plot for the runs method, but you see if the dimension reduction has gone wrong completely, so you can't find anything by the non-parametric regression step. On the other hand, you see that with DAME, well, you saw this wiggling sine curve coming out there, and you see that you can recover that structure by now applying the non-parametric regression on these data. But you also can see that the approximation looks somehow a little bit rough. I mean, this is, as I said, done with the runs method. It finds the structure, but somehow the approximation is rough. But then you can use the taut strings, and you see again with SIR, forget it. You can't see anything, but with the DAME first and then the taut strings robustified, now the approximation becomes clear and not as rough as before. So you see, this seems to be the most promising combination, using DAME in the dimension reduction step and then using the taut strings robustified as the non-parametric estimation of the function. And now you could say, okay, but there are other methods existing. I mean, how does your method compete with these? So I did the same for projection pursuit regression for the same data. And what you can see, or what I should tell you first, is I forced the projection pursuit regression method to be based on just one projection. so to be able to compare this to the outcome of the other methods. The other methods always yielded one direction, so a one-dimensional space. So I forced the projection pursuit regression just to choose the best projection so that the function can be approximated by one projection. And you see, again, in the case of the undisturbed data, there is no problem at all. It works quite fine, but with just this one outlier already, you see that the structure is heavily disturbed, and the projection pursuit regression does not really discover. I mean, you see that there is somehow this curvature in it, but it's not really discovered, and it's not really satisfying compared with what you saw before in this plot of Dame. So if you compare this to that one, you see that I would propose to use our combination method. And I want to finish with the data I gave you in the beginning. So you see how the methods work on real data. I have to say that in using the robust dimension reduction method DAME in the dimension reduction step as a byproduct, we can also identify outliers in the data set in this step. This is because this dimension reduction method does the centering based on the robust mean and covariance estimators, and these robust mean and covariance estimators at the same time define an outlier identification procedure, so you can at the same time find outliers in the data set. And in this air pollution and mortality data, we investigated them in an earlier paper, and we found 9 observations to be outliers in this data set. And I can show you first, this is the projection onto the dimension reduction direction found by SIR, and I can show you where the outliers are. With SIR, we don't identify them, but with DAME, we do, so I can tell you which are the points which were identified as outliers in this case. You saw that one here in, and especially you have, let me see, this one. So you see that SIR, that the direction found by SIR is somehow affected by these outliers, especially you see that one lying very in within the projected data. And then you see the estimated function F. The estimation is done here with the taut strings method, but as we saw before, even the best non-parametric regression method, robust regression method we can find, does no good if the dimension reduction step has gone wrong. Okay, just to compare things, same thing, but with DAME now, and again I show you where the outliers are, so you can see that they are now, this one is extreme, they are now at the border and not in the middle of the data. These are, well, okay, this one is sort of not really at the border, but not really in the middle. So you see that there is some difference in the main direction found. This is not that heavily influenced by the outliers. And this is the resulting function F you get. And this is, again, the taut strings method. And now we can compare this again with the outcome of projection pursuit regression. And you see that in this case, well, roughly there is a similar structure found with this peak in the middle, and you have this somehow similar peak there. You cannot really say here what is the true solution, of course. I can only argue that with the experiences from the simulations and from the theoretical results, we would say that this is the better solution for this data. And now I can show you, yes, I can. I can just show you, and you will have a deja vu now. It seems like it's the same as before. Again, the example. What is happening if we use the runs method instead of the taut strings? And you will see that this, what we already saw with the sine curve, that with the runs method, the function is somehow estimated more roughly, and this is all can also be seen here. I think we can more or less skip that because the SIR directions are not the ones that are the best, but Well, maybe I just show you the last comparison here. And you see that compared to what we saw before, now this is again a little bit more wheeling, more rough in some sense with the runs method. So if we conclude what is best to combine in this case, I would again come to the conclusion that we would best combine the DAME method for the dimension reduction step with the taut strings robustified in the function estimation, and then we have a powerful method to combine dimension reduction and robust regression. So to conclude, we have seen that this sort of dimension adjustment method in combining those two aspects seems to be very promising for high-dimensional regression. We have seen that robustness is necessary in all steps of this combination of the procedures. And as I told you, if you have problems with outliers in the regressor space, you can also use the DAME method to identify these outliers and eventually reject them. That would be also a possibility. As the final step, which is missing here, we would propose a smoothing. You saw that the result is a step function, so you maybe you should smooth this function as the final step, and this is work going on. And I think maybe next time I will be able to present you the smoothed function as the total result of this. And as a possible alternative, you can think about robust projection pursuit regression, of course. That would be a sensible alternative, I think, to what I presented here. And with that, I would like to finish. Thank you very much.
Thank you for staying so much inside of the time. Any questions?
I would like to understand your data a little bit better. Could you put up a picture again, either one of the methods?
Yes. The simulated or the real?
The real.
The real. Okay, let me take... Well, maybe that one.
So what is plotted here? You determine K is equal to 1? Or?
Yes, you determine K equal to 1.
So on the horizontal axis is some linear combination.
Right.
Of wealth and evolution. And
yep.
That sort of thing. And on the vertical axis?
On the vertical axis, you have just the response, the Y's.
And the
Y's was something about mortality.
In the whole population?
Yes.
Or due to some causes?
No, in the whole population, as far as I remember. Don't ask me about the scale.
I mean, do you believe these spikes, or I can't quite see why it happened?
Well,
can suddenly shoot up and then come back down?
I can't really tell you this, because,
I would have personally just put the straight line through.
I personally thought so first too, but then using this projection pursuit regression just as a sort of consideration whether this could be the case or not. Well, you see, this is sort of different, of course, but, on the other hand, it's not, I think it's the same, well, I'm not quite sure, you could also turn that around. I mean, it's not, the direction is not unique in that sense that you could not go in the opposite. So, because you...
I don't also understand what one means by mortality. What is that measuring? How many people die?
Something like that, yeah. I do not remember that exactly of what it is in the data set. But
I would expect that to be roughly constant.
Really? But dependent on something like air pollution and socioeconomic conditions, I wouldn't think so. Maybe under different conditions, the mortality will change. Yeah.
Any other questions?
That's not long. It's just a few seconds. No problem with that. I mean, if you get real... this data set is not... It was 59 observations in 12 dimensions. It's not that large. With really large data, the DAME method, it takes some more time than SIR. SIR runs very quick. It's no problem with that. You have, let me say, 2,000 observations in 50 dimensions, and you get the result within 2 or 3 seconds. With DAME, it takes a little bit more time, essentially because the programs we've written, or essentially I've written, are in NS+ code, and that seems not to be the best method to do so. So probably we should find somebody programming this in a proper C code, and then you would be able to compete with the times of Sir. I should say with DAME, with 1,000 observations in 50 dimensions, it would take 2 or 3 minutes. I mean, that's okay too, but still, it could be better, I think. But that's a problem of programming and not of the method itself.
And the only results that I know about the consistency of the of this procedure is when the eggs are elliptical.
More or less. There is a condition of linearity. I think the conditional expectation of y given x has to be linear in some projections of the x, and this is the condition under which there is the consistency result. Actually, for elliptical distributions, this is fulfilled, but
there is another case besides the elliptical case. There is another case that you can pinpoint where this condition is satisfied.
I don't know about results of this, but I know from experience that you can also apply the Sir method, for example, to time series data in a certain way, and there you have very different distributions, and it works quite fine. I don't know about the theory behind it yet, but from experience, it seems to work also under different conditions.
Last question. I have not quite understood the difference to projection pursuit, because in projection pursuit one also considers such a transpose x.
Yes.
Maybe by setting certain vectors a equal to 0, there's also a dimensional reduction.
Yes, that's true, but projection pursuit regression essentially tries to estimate the function together with projecting. And here we do 2 steps. In first projecting and then estimating the function, that is somehow different, because for the reduction step, we only take into account a very, very rough estimate of the regression function. So we are not really trying to find the best projection to find an optimal function estimation in the direction, like projection pursuit regression does, but we first try to find the space in which all the things are going on, and then we say, okay, now we are in the right space, and then we try to estimate F. This is the difference.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.